allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, next up is public comments announcements. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to make a public comment?
Thank you. Andy Hancock, local business owner, South Padre Island. Now, I've been here for 22 years, even though I still talk funny, so we'll get through it. I've talked to a number of local business owners today and over the past week, since the meeting on the special meeting on the expansion of the convention center. I just wanted to clarify a few points and try and ask for a bit of detail because I'm confused. There are a lot of different numbers at that meeting. A staggering number that we have 22 million in reserves, which was a staggering amount of money. But the main thing I wanted to make the point is that can we have some clarity on where these tax monies come from, what they are allowed legally to be spent on? Just a simple table to tell the public how the money is collected and what is allowed to be spent on. Because I think there's a lot of confusion going around venue tax, hot tax, a beach tax, all sorts of things, and what the percentages and the amounts allowed to be spent. Because it's an awful lot of money. If we, like the numbers were very confusing, but the big numbers were very scary. Spending, if the city was to borrow $80 million, I think, it was going to cost $12 million a year over 30 years. That's $360 million. That's a lot of money for a box. I call it a box because it is essentially a giant box. Building it, we should just get the guys who build SpaceX because they can put a seven-story box up in 4 weeks. So I don't think we need 30 months. Also, the length of time, that 30 months or however long the project's going to take, is that, that was confusing. Are the projected numbers from the CBB based on 25, 26, and 27? Because if they are, they obviously don't make any sense because the building is being remodeled. So I would like to know, or have some clarity at least, as to where the business is going to come from, the increased business, to pay the debt. Because we're going to have to do some business. And I've talked to a lot of local business owners, and everybody is down. Even some of the bars are down. If the bars are down on an island, which is on a beach, well, I've talked to business owners who don't own bars as well, obviously, and they're down too. And they've been down, it's been a slow decline since 23. So I think the numbers of visitors just aren't here. So the other point the numbers were confusing, but let's put it simply. And it's hypothetical, of course, if you sell 1 million rooms at $20 a room, you have $20 million in revenue. And that's what the tax, you know, all these other things would be taken out of. If you sell the same rooms for $40, you have half a million rooms. If you sell the same rooms, but the revenue is still 20 million, obviously. If you sell the same rooms for $200 a night, you have 100,000 rooms. So you're selling to less and less people, less and less rooms for more and more money. That's a bad business model because it's not sustainable. The other thing that happens, I want to talk about local business. For a local business, if we're attracting conventions don't do a lot for local businesses. Let's face it, I mean, the hotel owners in the room know that they have pools and jacuzzis and live music and restaurants and food and beach bars. Every single thing that a convention visitor would need, which is fantastic. That's their business model. They're not stupid. But how does that, when they can keep the person on property for the entire length of the convention, 2 days, 3 days, 1 day, whatever it is, how is that going to benefit local businesses? They're going to die on the vine if we pursue a massive debt for what's essentially an empty box. And I call it a box because the convention center is for conventions. It's not for the public. The public don't go to the convention center unless there's a public event or a paid event. They're running paid events now, I see. So the local businesses are going to suffer through no fault of their own. But the thing they're also going to suffer is eventually this debt is going to catch up with the island. I mean, $360 million, if that's the amount they borrow, I know it's hypothetical, $80 million is $12 million a year, $360 million over 30 years. That is a vast amount of money to spend on a convention center. Also, the numbers, the traffic numbers, just don't add up. And I've talked to a lot of people. I was in Port Aransas last week to check whether their tourism is up like our, or down like our tourism. They've got the same answer. They don't know. But I do know what they I do know what I did see. Between Corpus and Port Aransas, there is now 20 new developments, 20 big ones. They make the Frankie's shores look like a postage stamp. These things are monstrous, and there's 20 of them. So we may get left behind because our rooms are expensive. I put a post on Facebook, which has had a lot of reaction. I didn't expect the reaction it got. I was amazed. And the number one word that came out of it was expensive. It's expensive to get here, and it's expensive to stay here. So I would like to know, again, through a public forum, through meetings, through discussions with the CVB, how we're going to get back the people we used to have. Never mind to attract new ones. Why don't we try and get back the people we used to have? That's what I wanted to say. I just wanted, if the council could see their way to producing a list where we all understood the numbers and the revenue.
Thank you.
I would be grateful.
Next up.
Hi, good evening. My name is Gabriel Veneno. Good evening, Mayor, Commissioner, fellow business owners, and resident. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. I stand before you not only as a business owner and as a business owner of experience in retail lifestyle industry, but also as a chairman of the Development Review Board and deeply invested member in the community. Recently, I've been following discussion regarding proposed expansion of South Padre Island Convention Center. From what I've been seeing shared publicly, project could potentially be a high ticket number. We don't know that number. Nobody really does. We don't have the plans. It may include entertainment, movies, theaters, and funding will come from different sources of taxation bodies that we have in place. While I understand the intent is to stimulate tourism and economic growth, I believe it's important to pause and reflect before committing to such a large scale and high risk in Denver, especially in an evolving market that is rapidly shifting towards virtual and hybrid events. Convention business, as we have known it, is changing. AI-driven virtual conferences are becoming the norm. I've already seen notable decline in physical occupancy of events based on my travels and conventions I attend around the United States. And this trend will likely continue. But I do support an expansion for the convention at more one that fits the current foreseeable need, maybe a 25,000 square foot expansion to the main hall. In addition, for the convention center, it will accommodate signature events like TIFT, shallow sports, run over, basketball games, all the things that really well align with our local culture and tourism base. This expansion will provide flexibility and utility without placing the city under a heavy financial burden or exposing us to longer term liabilities. But I want to take this opportunity to shift the conversation towards transformational vision for South Padre Island. We've discussed before here in this board opportunities of us becoming a port of call. This kind of development that will truly redefine economic future for the business owners, the residents, and the growth of the island, cruise ship port of call will bring sustained tourism, international exposure, and year-round economic benefit to the island. While it may come with a healthy and probably heavy price tag, the long-term revenue potentially for cruise traffic will far surpass anything a movie theater expanded large scale.
Thank you, Gabby.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. All right, anybody else from the public have anything they wish to add? Anyone from staff have anything they wish to add? Anyone from council have something they wish to add?
Yeah, I want to compliment John Wilson and Alex Sanchez. Have been the last week. I've seen they've got a lot of projects going. I've seen them working on Harbor Street, repairing the road. I saw them finishing up Laguna Boulevard, detailing the medians. They look great. The landscaping and the lights are fantastic. I know you guys have also been working with Laguna Madre Water District. You got a lot of irons in the fire. And I know you're also working on the design for the new boat ramp. You guys are doing a hell of a job, and we appreciate it, and the pickleball court and the parking. So, Alex, John, you're doing a fantastic job. We're all proud of you.
Okay, anybody else from council have any public comments? All right, we'll move to item number 4, which is presentation and proclamation. We'll move to 4.1, which is presentation of on HA5 high-density mineral, which is a seal coating bond applied on East Jupiter, East Hibiscus, and East Lantana Streets.
Mayor, City Council, Alex Sanchez, Public Works Director. A couple of months ago, we did 3 streets for HA5. I got Anthony Coppola with Andelic Construction and give you a presentation.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Anthony Capel. I'm with Andel Construction. Kind of like Alex said, this was our first year applying this product on the island here, and it turned out really good. How do I click through here? Essentially, what HA5 is as you can tell, Alex is doing a lot of repaving out here. This product is more of a proactive maintenance type of product to seal those roads, get a nice preservation type treatment on them, and preserve them in the long run is what this is. That was it's kind of what it looks like. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to see those roads yet. They were done in April of this year, that being our first pilot project here in the island. So Alex just kind of wanted to bring me in just to shed some light on it and just tell you guys thank you for the work, and we appreciate the opportunity to work this year and hopefully continue with you guys in the future. So,
right. We appreciate it. Yes. Looks like it's a great product, so we appreciate it very much. Okay. Next, we'll move up to 4.2, which is, thank you, presentation, update, and briefing on the 89th legislative session by Luis Sanchez from Hans Scarborough. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well, Mayor. Thank you. Mayor, council members, my name is Luis Sanchez with the law firm of Hans Scarborough. I'm your lobbyist in Austin, and I'm here to present on an update following the 89th regular legislative session and talk about issues ahead of the upcoming special session. So despite unprecedented politics this session, I'm pleased to report that South Padre Island saw significant legislative progress on key victories that protect local control. And real gain for coastal and municipal priorities. But let's begin with our top legislative priority, which is the qualified hotel project under Chapter 351 of the tax code. We were very fortunate to have strong leadership in our legislative champions. Senator Adam Hinojosa and Representative Janie Lopez both worked diligently on the city's behalf, filing legislation, securing hearings, advocating with chamber leadership, and standing with us late in session when politics turned a little volatile. Their efforts ensured that our bill was on an agreed-to list of approved projects in both chambers, was successfully reported out of committee in both the House and the Senate, and ultimately included in HB 2974, which was the omnibus hotel occupancy tax bill. It's also worth emphasizing that in a legislative session that adopted a no exception posture related to hotel occupancy tax legislation. We were one of the few localities to successfully request and receive an exception. That speaks volumes about the credibility of the Convention Center project and an adjacent hotel proposal, and the respect that South Padre Island commands at the Capitol. Unfortunately, that progress was appended late in session after a conservative group began targeting all of the hotel occupancy tax bills and threatening members of the legislature with political consequences. As a result, House and Senate leaders made the decision to consolidate over 30 separate hot bills into that single omnibus that I mentioned. Then a late amendment added by the Senate closed a loophole that was being exploited by a certain North Texas sports franchise. And this became a flashpoint. The Senate, in an unprecedented move, issued an ultimatum to the House, signed by all 31 members. It was take the bill with the amendment or leave it, and the House refused to concur. And as a result, all of the 30-plus projects that were included in this omnibus bill died on the final days of session. It's important to note that an appeal was made to include hotel occupancy tax legislation in the call for the upcoming special session, citing the economic importance of the over 30 projects statewide. However, it's an issue that will have to wait until the next regular legislative session in 2027. But I want to be clear about something related to our priority. We succeeded at every point along the way that was within our control. The legislative groundwork that laid this session puts us in a very strong position to renew this effort next session with even greater momentum. The 89th session also posed some existential threat to local control. Several bills that were expansive on municipal preemption, bills that we discussed prior to the legislative session, dubbed the Death Star bills, were filed to limit cities of their governing authority. These bills would have stripped cities of authority over zoning, labor regulations, environmental protections, and even health standards. Their failure to pass represents a clear victory for home rule cities like yours, and is a validation of the role that local governments play in addressing community-specific needs. Thanks to the unified opposition of cities from across the state and advocacy led by local government groups, none of those Death Star bills passed. And this is a major victory for cities like ours and ensures that the city of South Padre Island can maintain the flexibility to respond to its unique needs of the island community. The legislature did pass several targeted preemptions. The most notable was Senate Bill 840 by Senator Hughes. It limits a city's ability to restrict multifamily housing in commercial zones. And while this doesn't necessarily mandate high-density housing in South Padre Island, it narrows local zoning discretion in areas where commercial or office uses are already allowed. HB 2464 protects no-impact home-based businesses, but it importantly also preserves a city's authority to regulate short-term rentals. So as long as it's done reasonably to protect health, safety, and quality of life. Despite these new boundaries, local control over short-term rentals remains intact, and the city is positioned to continue managing this issue in a way that reflects the unique coastal and tourism-driven needs of the city. Additional preemptions include a restriction on how cities regulate mobile food vendors licensed by the state. The bill was filed with the intention to reduce redundancy, but it also limits local control over congestion and siting. There is a victory for coastal communities. Senate Bill 783 expands exemptions to construction materials preemption, which allows enforcement of windstorm-specific standards. This is a meaningful victory for coastal resilience. And several bills passed related to TWIA, HB 2213, HB 2517 and 18, Senate Bill 458 and Senate Bill 783. In summary, these bills enhanced TWIA's claim and processing operations, and they strengthen transparency and support wind-resistant construction, all directly benefiting property owners and local governments along the Gulf. There's also some operational changes for city management. Senate Bill 1173 raises the bidding threshold from $50,000 to $100,000, providing cities more flexibility for procurement. Senate Bill 1851 ties property tax authority to completion of annual audits. This reinforces financial discipline. HB 1522 changes the Open Meetings Act by replacing the 72-hour notice rule with a new 3 business days posting requirement. This may shorten some preparation time depending on holidays and weekends. Senate Bill 506 and Senate Bill 1025 impose new ballot language requirement, including the now mandatory, quote, "this is a tax increase" label for certain elections. There's also new oversight and reporting requirements on general obligation bonds. The legislature passed 2 bills, HB 103 and HB 3526, that create extensive new reporting obligations for cities issuing general obligation bonds or holding tax rate elections. Cities must report detailed information about every proposed or voter-approved bond, including ballot language, estimated tax impact, project lists, and how proceeds are spent with backfilled years of 10 years of historical bond and tax data. All of this information is reported to the comptroller. These reflections reflect growing demands in fiscal transparency and signal tighter state oversight on how local governments manage tax-supported debt. For South Potter Island, staying ahead of these new requirements will be critical when planning future capital projects and potential bond elections. One of the more politically charged issues triggering the special session was related to hemp-derived products, particularly those containing Delta-8 and Delta-9 THC, which, if you're not familiar, are chemically similar to marijuana. During the regular session, the legislature passed SB3, which would have banned these products outright and essentially dismantle the recreational hemp industry. However, Governor Abbott vetoed the bill, stating that while it was well-intentioned, it contained some undeniable legal defects. And while it was well-intentioned, it would render it unenforceable, prompting the governor to call a special session and revisit this issue with cleaner litigation-proof language. The revised goal is to impose strict but legal sustainable regulations, not necessarily an outright ban, on these products, which have flooded the market and are often marketed to minors. I expect that that based on how the call is structured, it's the intention of the governor to preserve the legality of hemp as an agricultural commodity while placing in strict enforcement bans for underage sales and targeting of minors. So I mentioned the special session. I just want to give you a preview of what's on the table. There are 18 items on the call, including property tax relief and caps on spending by taxing entities, a ban on taxpayer-funded lobbying, flood preparedness infrastructure, flood recovery funding and FEMA local match. Obviously, these were added due to the recent floods in Central Texas, but I would expect that there would be legislation that would have sweeping impacts on coastal communities as well. Streamlining disaster rules, confidentiality protections for local law enforcement, incentivizing water conservation through impact fees, ban on hemp-derived products like we discussed, comprehensive hemp regulation. Congressional redistricting will be coming up to address constitutional concerns raised by the Department of Justice. STAR test repeal and replacement, expanded abortion-related protections, affirmative defense for trafficking victims, protection for women's privacy in sex-segregated spaces, AG prosecution on state election crimes, deed and title fraud protection, judicial branch administration, and public safety communications infrastructure. So bill filing opened on Monday, and we're already seeing legislation filed that would centralize bond election approval, alter timing and requirements for general obligation bonds elections, abolishment of ad valorem taxes entirely, an imposition of new limits on municipal spending, a restriction on lobbying activities and funding, and a cap on tax-supported debt issuance. So several of these issues may directly affect South Padre Island. And before the legislative session begins, I'd welcome your guidance, especially on the following: flood infrastructure and emergency preparedness, property tax limits on spending caps, defense of the city's ability to participate in lobbying and advocacy coalitions, and law enforcement communication infrastructure. Your input to me will help us represent your priorities when these issues begin moving. In closing, I want to say that although the 89th legislature was turbulent, South Padre Island stayed focused. We made progress, and we protected what matters. We defended local authority, positioned the Hotel Convention Center project for future success, and participated in legislative wins for the coast, as well as strengthening our relationship in both legislative chambers. Our delegation, Senator Hinojosa and Representative Lopez, delivered. And the work we did this session sets the stage for future success. I also want to extend a heartfelt thank you to each of you for coming to Austin and taking time to visit the Capitol during this session and advocate directly for South Padre Island. Your presence at the Capitol really makes a difference. And when lawmakers can hear from you directly, it carries weight. Not only did you help advance our legislative agenda, but your presence there is one of the reasons that South Padre Island continues to earn respect in every room that we walk into. Finally, I'd like to say how proud we are at Hans Scarborough to represent the city. This community is not only one of Texas's premier destinations, it's a place with vision, character, and a deep commitment to responsible growth and stewardship. And it's my honor to help you elevate the city's voice. It's a city that punches well above its weight. The respect that South Padre Island carries at the Capitol is a reflection of your leadership, and we are grateful to be part of that story. I want to thank you, and I want to welcome any questions or direction you may have that you'd like to offer before the special session begins.
To the dismantling of FEMA and the Coastal Protection Fund that was developed, you know, are y'all going to be focusing more, since I guess it's going to, I guess, from FEMA down to the local protection for the beach nourishment? Is that something that I think we need to focus on?
It's not on the call for the special session, but certainly working with the Texas Department of Emergency Management and the General Land Office, we'll be sure that we're providing support for the city in that way. You know, the work that we do for you is not limited to what happens at the Capitol and the legislature only. We're available to provide support to the city before regulatory bodies as well, and so we're happy to do that.
Carrie, you got anything?
Nope, good job.
Good job.
Joe?
Thank you.
Louis, was there a bill recently passed that froze the TWEO rates for 2026? Or did I misread that?
I think that was done by TWEO itself. I believe it did.
There was some TWIA legislation that was attempted, but nothing really got passed, right?
That's right. Yeah, there's Senator Middleton, who represents the Galveston area, has attempted for several sessions to overhaul TWIA and create some meaningful reform. It's such a complicated subject that it's been difficult in the past. Every session makes incremental progress at reforming how TWIA is operated. But as you're well aware in South Padre Island, TWIA is not an absolute solution. It's intended to support after disaster, but fails in many ways. And part of I think Senator Middleton's goals with reforming TWIA is to ensure that there is more transparency and participation from coastal communities, that there's a way for engagement with along the coast. One of those provisions I know that he's been trying to pass is to get TWIA's meetings in coastal communities so that the citizens of Texas who are most affected by windstorm have the ability to participate and let their voice be heard instead of having to travel to Austin to do so.
You mentioned on a special session there's a FEMA and flood response. Is part of that FEMA flood response with the idea that FEMA might end up going away, that Texas is building up or trying to figure out what the long-term plan would be if FEMA does dissolve in October, like planned, I guess? Is that part of that or is that just kind of waiting and to see what happens and then possibly another something else would happen?
So,
I know I'm throwing this at you. I just was thinking about it because she brought it up. So.
Sure. I know that that some legislators are looking at the recent disaster in Central Texas as a lessons learned opportunity when it comes to developing public policy around disaster recovery, especially when it comes to flood mitigation. And so I would expect some legislation around that, empowering state authorities to do more, as well as local communities as well, in order to work on preventing the next type of flood disaster, as well as improving responsiveness.
Because it seems like that's what FEMA's goal or the future goal is to not have bodies, but to have money come down, and it's up to the state to provide the bodies for the response.
That's right. The way that I envision this being implemented over the next years is that FEMA assistance will come in the form of block grants that the state will administer.
Okay. Ken, what about you? It's good. Well, I hate to make you come down from Austin for, a quick 15-minute presentation, but thank you very much for doing
that. I always love being here. It's my pleasure.
I know you do, and I appreciate it.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You.
I have the capabilities of dragging this on if you'd like to hang around a lot.
The art of filibuster.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
We'll move to item number 5, which is approved consent agenda. We're going to pull 5.3. Is there a motion to approve 5.1, 5.2, 5.4, 5.5?
Motion to approve.
I'll second.
All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Motion carries.
Same.
Okay. Don't want to give yourself your own absence. Okay. We'll move to 6.1, which is discussion and action to authorize the city. Oh, 6, regular agenda, 6.1. Discussion and action to authorize the city manager to enter into a contract with the best qualified bidder for the Marisol Laguna Madre boat ramp and a budget amendment in the amount of up to $1,760,918 from Fund 62 Excess Reserves.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council, Christina Baburka, Shoreline Director. So this boat ramp project is partially funded through the Restore Act grant. We went out to bid and opened bids on June 26th. We received three bids, and we had a scoring committee review those bids. That included myself, our coastal coordinator, two members from our Shoreline Task Force, and our project engineer or project manager from our engineering firm, LJA Engineering. The three bids that we received, the first was Bryan Industrial Services. Their bid amount was $1,760,917.83. The timeline to complete is 240 days. They do have boat ramp experience, and their average score was 102.4 out of 110. The second bid was from Foremost Paving. Their bid was just over $2.1 million, estimating to take about a year to complete the boat ramp. They did not have any boat ramp experience, and their average score was 92 out of 110. And the last bid was from Jerdon Enterprise. Their bid was over $2.3 million. They had small ramp experience. They were going to take 280 days, and their average score was 79 out of 110. And just to clarify, we had some we have correction on our fiscal backup. This will actually come from Fund 202, our Convention Center Fund, and from their excess reserves. This does not qualify, and we've already spoken with Rodrigo and Ed. For our matching amount, we cannot use our Fund 60 clean and maintain the clean and maintain funds, hot funds. So we will need to use the convention center funds, and they have approximately $22.5 million in excess reserves. Total grant amount that we will get reimbursed is $1,125,729. And if the low bid is chosen, our match would be $635,189 for construction.
The $1 million grant, that's on top of the grant that we got to purchase the land, right?
Correct, yes. We had over $1 million for the land. So I think in total we've had over $2 million in grants and approximately only $700,000 match.
How long ago was it when we met with TCEQ in Austin? Just out of curiosity, was that 3 years ago?
Yeah. We estimate
we're getting close.
We estimate construction hopefully to start in September. So this is through TCEQ is our state grant agency, but it is U.S. Treasury funds, and so we do have to request a notice to proceed from the Treasury. And so hopefully it won't take that long, but we're estimating September.
Great, appreciate it.
BIS.
Yes. So the highest ranked, was BIS.
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
Motions to accept BIS as the contractor.
My motion is to authorize the city manager
to enter the contract with BIS.
Bidder, which is BIS for the Marisol boat ramp. And a budget amendment in the amount of up to $1,769,918 for Fund 02 excess reserves. And we have a second.
And sorry, real quick, that does include $100,000 in contingency.
Okay. Is there any other questions?
When will they
start? I think September.
We have to wait for the Treasury, so they're ready to start as soon as Treasury says go.
So there is a notice to proceed checklist that I actually have already filled out. It's just a matter of finalizing the contract to get that to them. And so hopefully that'll just be a pretty big, quick turnaround. TCEQ's already reviewed what I've put in there. We had a bunch of requirements to meet, and so hopefully it'll be a quick turnaround.
Great.
Construction access will come from the Boulevard. What's that little street?
We come from Laguna and from Marisol.
Laguna and Marisol, okay.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just looking at how they're going to.
Okay. All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Next up is 6.2, which is discussion and action to approve the submission of the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation's National Coastal Resiliency Fund grant proposal and allow the mayor to execute a letter of support.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council, Christina Baburka, Shoreline Director. This grant proposal is to continue our dune restoration efforts in the southern portion of our city limits. We've seen a great success, and we've really focused on the northern, and this is just a proactive measure for the southern portion. We've seen increase in tidal inundations and storms, and so this is to do planting and sand fencing in areas within those southern 2 miles. I have to request $500,000 in grant funds with a match of $100,000. That would be from our Fund 81 Beach Renourishment Fund, and that is part of the local hot tax. And this, we would have 2 years for construction to do the project, and then a year of monitoring. And Shoreline Task Force recommended approval of submission. And sorry, I should have said that for the last item too, but they reviewed that yesterday, both items.
Right. Anybody have any questions?
And the grant's due tomorrow, so.
Nothing like the last minute, right? All right, so we have a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Quickly.
I'll second.
All right, any other discussion? All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Motion carries. You need me to sign it right now, or you can wait a few minutes? Okay. All right. Next up is 6.3, which is discussion and action to approve the first reading of ordinance number 25-05, amending Chapter 2 of the Code of Ordinances of the City of South Butter Island by providing for the change or establishment of all fees imposed for services by the city.
Hey, our council members. Good evening. This is, you know, this fee ordinance includes all the fees that the city charges for different services. Basically, once a year during the budget process, all the department heads have the option or the opportunity to update these fees. We have a couple of proposed adjustments to reflect more the actual cost of the service. Most of the adjustments are basically really small. We have requests from planning, code enforcement, building, public works, transit, parks, and shoreline, and fire and EMS. The vast majority or the bulk of the changes is probably under the building inspections division and the fire and EMS division as well. There's a summary attached to your packet, easy to read. With the description of the fee, the actual fee that is being charged, and the proposed one. And we have all department heads here to answer any questions you may have for a specific fee.
Anybody have any questions?
No.
Somebody like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Since there wasn't any discussion the first time around, I'm going to ask if there is any discussion now.
Mayor, right.
Yes.
It's not in the packet, but the first paragraph of that ordinance, I'll get it back to Nikki, but says something to the effect that unless otherwise indicated by another ordinance, these fees apply, just in case we miss something. And there's also, I know a number of fees were increased or actually enacted for appeals of certain variances and things of that nature because of all the time that staff takes to put it together.
It's a lot of work. So, all right. We're going to vote on ordinance number 25-05, an ordinance of the City of South Butter Island, Texas, amending S section 2-75 of chapter 2 of the Code of Ordinances of the City of South Padre Island pertaining to development services and beach maintenance, providing for repeal of conflicting ordinances, providing for severability, and providing for publication in caption form. All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Motion carries. All right, next up is discussion action on ordinance number 25-06, authorizing the issuance, sale, and delivery of approximately $6 million in aggregate principal amount of the City of South Padre Island Texas Tax Note Series 2025 for street improvements and vehicle and equipment for public safety, securing the payment thereof, and by authorizing the levy of an annual ad valorem tax and opposing and authorizing the execution of all other instruments and procedures related thereto.
That's a long one. This is basically the tax note, I guess the formal approval of this issuance of the tax note for $6 million, which will be used for site for street improvements, $4.5 million for street improvements, $1.2 million for fire and EMS equipment, including new ambulances and equipment for the new fire truck, and $300,000 for public safety vehicles, as well as radios for public safety. So this is the whole package. We have today Dave Gorman with Estrada Hinojosa. He's our financial advisor, who has a quick presentation of the sale of the tax note. So, Dave.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Good evening, Mayor, Council Members, City Manager. Again, Dave Gorman with Estrada Hinojosa. We're your financial advisor. So as Rodrigo mentioned, today you went out into the markets to sell approximately $6 million in tax notes. So just very briefly, talk about interest rates. Obviously, there's a lot going on in the economy right now, a lot of uncertainty. But you can see in this chart that basically plots the 30-year Treasury with a couple of different indices using the tax-exempt bond markets. The message here really is that since about 2022, rates have gone up fairly significantly, but you can see that they're still relatively low on a historical perspective. And this is just another graph on the market. And again, we could spend a lot of time on the market. I'm trying to get through this relatively quickly. This is an index that's used to track, again, the tax-exempt bond market. It's called the AAA MMD, or Municipal Market Data. And you can kind of see the history since 2000. Each of these maturities, 1 through 30, the vertical bars represent kind of the range of rates during that period. And then the blue boxes represent the average of each of those rates. And then the diamonds represent where we are today. And so basically, if you were to sell a 30-year obligation, it would really be 30 individual maturities. In this case, you sold a 7-year obligation, which I'll talk about in a minute. So you can see that we're kind of on the shorter end of the yield curve. Rates are higher than they have been historically, but they're not astronomically higher. So the finance team, again, with Estrada Hinojosa and TRB Capital Markets, your bond counsel, Jay Juarez at McCall, Parkhurst, and Horton. We had one underwriter in this particular case. It was Raymond James, and they were represented by Kassan and Ortiz. And then you have your paying agent, Bank of New York Mellon. We did go out and get a rating for the obligations. The city has a rating from S&P of a AA+, so that's one notch below a AAA rating. Obviously a very, very strong investment grade credit rating, which you guys should be proud of. It really signifies that you guys are doing everything that you can control, you're doing right. Probably just based on the size of the city, it would be very difficult to get to the AAA, but obviously, again, you're doing all the things right in terms of managing your finances and everything else.
What's the federal rating? Isn't it a AA+?
Well, yeah, they were downgraded by, I think, now all of the agencies, so...
Okay.
Yes, so you're right in line there.
Right in line there, all right, with less debt.
You don't have the ability to print your own money, but you're getting close now. So basically we sized this around $6 million in terms of the project fund requirement, as Rodrigo mentioned. The notes were actually sold at a premium, so they were sold above their face value. So you notice that the par amount is actually $5.7 million, even though you're going to get $6 million for your projects. And then you can see the cost of issuance there. The underwriters were paid certain fees. And then in the other cost of issuance fund, they're basically our fees, fees for bond counsel. We pay fees to the attorney general, the paying agent, and the rating agencies. So this is basically what the tax rate implication looks like. You've got existing debt service there in the third column or so. And that only goes out through 2031. It's fairly short. You can see the new obligations. That debt service is fairly level out through 2032. The notes would be sold at a rate of 3.1% in terms of the true interest cost, and closed on 8/13. And then as you work your way towards the right-hand side, this is about a 2.5 cent tax rate increase. I know that Rodrigo is still working through what the final taxable assessment valuation of your property values are going to be, but it's going to be around there. And I think he mentioned before he would do it, we would do it under 3 cents. So it's definitely underneath that. And then you may recall that you discussed back on June 4th, basically the to go ahead and proceed with the issuance of the notes. We did work with your staff to prepare an offering document called the preliminary official statement. Again, I mentioned the rating, we had a due diligence call. And then today, the underwriter went out and found investors. They actually had investors to basically meet all of the needs on the last three maturities. The first four maturities of the obligations, they sold about 25% of that, and the rest of it, they're taking an inventory and will sell that. And as I mentioned, August 13th is the date that we would close, and you would receive the funds. So what you have before you today is a bond ordinance that includes all of the pricing details, et cetera, that I know Rodrigo circulated earlier. That was prepared by bond counsel and underwriters counsel, and that's what you'd be approving today if you want to approve the sale. So if there's any questions, happy to take those.
Anybody have any questions? Okay. So people paid us extra money to carry our debt. That's what the premium is?
Absolutely.
There you go. All right. Okay, so then we'll need a motion to approve ordinance number 2025-06.
Make a motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any other discussion? All right, hearing none, we're going to vote on ordinance number 25-06, an ordinance authorizing the issuance, sale, and delivery of $6 million in aggregate principal amount of the City of South Padre Island, Texas Tax Note Series 2025, securing the payment thereof by authorizing the levy of an annual ad verum tax and approving and authorizing the execution of a paying agent, registrar agreement, a purchase contract, an official statement, and all other instruments and procedures related thereto. All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Motion carries. Now we'll move to item number 6.5, which, from my understanding, we were able to collect the past due amount. This was on here because we've had over $500,000 from other hoteliers not remit their hot tax, and we've implemented a zero tolerance policy on it. So we appreciate the payment on the hot tax, and thank you all for being there. So we'll pull that item, and we'll move on to 6.6, which is discussion and action to direct staff to request approval from the Texas Department of Transportation, TxDOT, to add solar lighted crosswalks indicators in the center median on PR 100. Okay, Wendy, this was brought up because, you know, we were seeing all of us have brought up the crosswalk issue, and, you know, looking at what's been happening this summer, it seems like most drivers are focused on the center of the median and not focused on the outside. And if you're driving in the center lane, you can't see the outside lane, so you can't see the blinking lights. And so I'd ask this to be put on here. Wendy informed me that we have talked about this with TxDOT several times, but to go ahead and put it on here again to reiterate to TxDOT that we really would like to have these blinky lights in, I don't know if that's a technical term, but in the center of the median where people's eyes are focused, because medians automatically generate your eyes towards the median, which is part of the purpose, and it would increase safety. We've already almost had a fatality down in the, 2200 block or whatever. And so we have it on here. Wendy, please go ahead.
Correct, Mayor. Wendy Delgado, Director of Operations for the city. Randy and Public Works and I have had multiple discussions with TxDOT about this. It will help today, though. I think if you take formal action to ask staff to approach them again, maybe we can come up with a different. We had talked about spacing, I know, the other day when we talked about it. Maybe if they can move it back. Right off the tip of that median. I think that was their concern in the past. But they are very supportive. They've actually been very supportive of all of our crosswalk initiatives for pedestrians and basically stating, because it's typically what we've done with some of these signs is the city will purchase the sign initially, but then they agree to maintain it. So once it gets, typically they get hit by a car or something like that, they'll maintain the sign in their next annual maintenance agreement. So we work with them very well in the San Benito District, and we're happy to try again.
Well, I think that if we ask them to push it back like 10 feet, and then maybe we tell them that we'll maintain it if it gets hit.
Okay.
If council is likes that idea.
We've tried to get them to approve putting strip lighting in the street, across the street, and they keep...
We've tried a lot of things.
And they keep denying.
They've approved lots of things we've requested, but they have to go off their certain manual. And the manual, I believe we asked in 23 is when we had a ton of pedestrian requests that we have email chains back and forth. I can't remember off the top of my head, but they were working on a newer manual. So when the newer manual is approved, it could have some different options for us. But I do know some of that has to do with it, that they have to follow that manual related to crosswalks.
I know we have sent them many proposals to make it safer and provide some security for pedestrians. And isn't happening.
From my understanding is they acknowledge that South Padre Island is probably the most pedestrian conscious city in the Rio Grande Valley.
Yes, they have said that they
understand our concerns about the walkability and pedestrian safety. But I think this one we just need to make a motion and try to go back to the well again and convince them that we would really, really like some sort of indicator in the center medians.
That they have worked with us several times is on pilot projects. They really like it when we do the pilot projects. We have one out there right now where the lights shine down at night. That's a pilot project, and we've had some others in different areas for different things. So if anything, maybe we could, try
make all four of them or five of them pilot projects and see what happens.
What happens?
See what the odds are if one gets hit or not.
If we call it a pilot project, it might go through.
There you go.
All right.
Second.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Mayor, do you think it'd be possible to include in the ask them to consider the red lights? You know, we do this once a year, twice a year. We get the same answer, but I see other towns, Austin, San Antonio, other towns have got the blinking red lights. Would it hurt to ask?
I mean, we can ask. What you're going to see the difference is what they're going to say is Austin's on city roads and not
right.
State roads.
Yes, sir.
But we
could ask that before too. We have a formal request, but we're happy we can ask it all again. Yeah. It's not a problem.
Throw it in there again, sure. and see what happens.
Maybe we can wear them down.
Maybe we can say the red. Maybe we can use that as a negotiation tactic along with a pilot program or something. So, all right. Any other discussion?
Thank you.
All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed. All right, motion carries. We'll move to item number 7, which is 7.1, closed executive session pursuant to section 551.072, deliberation about real property. A closed session will be held to discuss the possible purchase of real property related to parks and venue tax. Is there a motion?
Make a motion to go into executive session.
I'll second.
Give it to the left. All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? All right, so it's 6:36. We're going to executive session. We should be out shortly. Thank you all. 6:55, we're going to come back from executive session. We're going to pull items 8.1 and 8.2. We're going to go to 8.3, which is discussion and possible action to approve the purchase contract. After the city attorney's approval for the purchase of real property for the venue tax project.
I'd like to make a motion. I'd like to make a motion to instruct the city manager to approve the purchase of contract for 119.4 acres at a cost of $895,725 after the city attorney approves for the purchase of the real property for a venue tax project.
All right, any discussion? All in favor, please raise your... Oh, sorry, second?
I'll second.
All right, there you go. All right, any other discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please raise your hand. Excellent. Opposed, motion carries. Seeing there's no other items on the agenda, we are adjourned. Thank you all, have a great day.
Thank you, Patrick. Great meeting, yep. As always.
As always?